You are Locked On Giants, your daily podcast on the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. Today is Friday, June 1st. Happy June. We are just 20 days away from the official start of summer, and we are probably, a little more than a couple months away from the start of football training camp. I am Patricia Traina of Inside Football, The Athletic, Forbes, Big Blue View, and a bunch of other places. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And, Ed, we have part two of a show that we started yesterday in which we are going down the line and listing our favorite Giants at positions. Yesterday we did the offense. Today we are going to do defense and special teams. And I don't know about you, but so far I've been having fun going down memory lane.
I enjoyed that, Patty. I really did. I thought, it's funny because it makes you think about some guys and some things that you probably, haven't really thought about for a while. So I enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to doing the defense and the special teams today.
All right. So on that note, let's kick it off. Now, for those of you who didn't hear yesterday's show, we are not going exactly position by position. We're doing position units. But in a case like, an offensive line where we could list more than one, we're just going to keep going from back to front and just rattling off some names. So, Ed, let's start with the defensive line. You can go from any era. And the object, again, for those of you who didn't catch yesterday's show, is we're going to give you a name, and we're going to tell you a little bit about why we picked that name. So, Ed, give me your defensive lineman.
Oh, Patty, when you think about the New York Giants and you think about defensive line, there's just so many guys to pick from who could be favorites. I mean, obviously, Michael Strahan. Justin Tuck was a huge favorite, of mine. I can go way back to even the wilderness years of the Giants, and I had an appreciation for a guy Giants fans might not even think about a whole lot, a guy like John Mendenhall, who played good football for a long time on a lot of bad Giants teams. But the name I'm going to give you is one that's a little bit of a nod to my father, which is one I also did that yesterday. My father was an all-area high school football player at the nose tackle position. And when we used to sit and watch football together, there were certain things that he appreciated in a defensive tackle play, linebacker play. I'm going to give you Jim Burt. Just because of the way he played the game and the enjoyment, that we saw from Jim Burt, when the Giants were victorious, in some of those championship games, just as a nod to the way that he played the game, and to the blue collar work ethic, I'm going to give you Jim Burt.
I'm not surprised that you went there. I was actually a Jim. I'm not surprised because I agree with you. I remember Jim Burt from the 1980s. I believe he was undrafted, and he was, he was a classic Bill Parcells guy, blue collar, showed up, did his thing, was tough as nails. I believe he was a little bit of a prankster, too. He added a little bit of flair to the locker room. Guy that you just couldn't help but love if you were a Giant fan back in the day. I'm going to go a little bit more recent, and I actually have three guys all from the same team because these are guys who just kind of stick out for one reason or another. And then the trio of – well, actually, I should say four because, there's so many.
Oh, you're going to give us a whole defensive line, Patty. You're going to give us a whole four-man front. All right, go ahead.
Let me reverse course here a little bit. Michael Strahan, of course, I mean, he's an obvious pick. Everybody's favorite, good guy. I always got along with Strahan, and you know, obviously Hall of Fame guy, but from the Michael Strahan tree, let's put it this way. How about we go from the Michael Strahan tree, if you will, because these are guys that Strahan kind of worked with, kind of mentored, and was there for. So there's three guys: OCU Manura, Justin Tuck, and then I'm going to give you a guy who a lot of people don't really mention, because he was kind of a blink and you'll miss some guy, but he was so important to that defense, Dave Tollefson. All right, OCU Manura. I thought, I can remember Strahan telling me in an interview that he predicted that OC would one day break his NFL sack record. Now, I don't think OC King, I don't know how remember how close he came to it, but OC was pretty good as a pass rusher back in the day. Also a really nice guy, you know, a guy who, you know, just to watch him from the time he was a rookie into the time he retired, and just to see that development was just very special. Justin Tuck, same thing. You know, Tuck and I always used to have a special, like, way we used to communicate. In other words, I would see him on a Monday, and I'd say to him, so how old are you feeling today, Justin? And the higher the number, the more I knew he was beat up. It was so funny. It was kind of a way of gauging how he was, and just hilarious, because I remember when he retired, I remember going up to him and saying, so how old do you feel? And he gave me his actual age. So I says, oh, I guess you're all healed up then. And he kind of smiled and everything like that. So just a really, you know, cute little behind-the-scenes story there. But Justin Tuck, you know, he was a captain. I know there was that period of time in, I think it was 2011, where he had a little bit of a rough patch. But he pulled it together. You know, he needed a little, you know, boost in the butt. But he pulled it together, and he was so instrumental and part of the championship teams, and just a really good leader. And it's so nice to see him now having the success after his career. He got his degree from Wharton, I believe, and I think he's involved with that new football league. So just a really, you know, tremendous human being who just happened to be a really awesome football player. And then finally, Dave Tollefson was always a personal favorite of mine because, again, wasn't flashy. He, you know, you weren't going to see his name in consideration for any Pro Bowl votes or All-Pro or anything like that. But, man, that guy was gritty. And if anybody loved the game more than him, you know, on the defensive line, I'd like to meet him, because Tollefson knew that if he that he was, you know, he had to earn everything that he got. He wasn't of the opinion that, oh, I have a right to be here. And he worked his butt off for everything he got. And he actually was a key contributor to the 2007 championship team. And a lot of people might not know this, but he was actually a leader in that locker room as well. Maybe not to the degree of a Strahan or, you know, or some of the other guys that they had. But Tollefson, you know, when stuff needed to be said, he would speak up. And just a really tough-nosed guy who I respected and who I consider, you know, a tremendous person. I'm very fortunate to have gotten to cover in my career. So those are my guys, all from the Strahan tree.
There you go, okay. Patty. So you put Strahan in there, and we have an entire NASCAR package.
Yeah, there you go. You got the NASCAR package, exactly.
Right.
Okay. Linebacker. Okay. So before we had the little gap in the linebackers, and actually, you know, there've been a few that have passed through since the days of the Crunch Bunch, but who stands out to you, obviously, other than some dude named LT?
Oh yeah, let's just leave him out of the whole conversation. For a lot of reasons, you know, there's a couple guys from that era. You know, I think about, you know, when I think about the era of awful Giants football way back in the 70s, you know, I think about, you know, one of the bright spots to watch was Brad Van Pelt. You know, one of the terrific players from that era, you know, when the Giants began to turn things around, and one of my favorite people now, a guy who's been good to me, you know, over the years as I've been covering the Giants, is Carl Banks. You know, he's a personal favorite. Like I said, in large part, just because he's good to me. I think he's been, you know, in some ways he's probably been good to Big Blue View. You know, he's helped me on a number of occasions, you know, with some things. Antonio Pierce, you know, is another guy. Chase Blackburn is another one. But I think the guy that I'm going to give you, my all-time favorite, is Harry Carson. I just appreciated the way that he carried himself through all the bad years that he was the Giants' middle linebacker and probably best defensive player. And I've always appreciated the way that he has treated people and the good things that he has tried to do outside the game, you know, since he's been retired, you know, from his playing days. I've just always appreciated Harry Carson, I think, for the way that he carried himself as well as, if not more, than the kind of player that he was.
I have to agree with you. Harry Carson, real key story that I will share. Again, my mentor, Dr. Livingston, who was the original owner and publisher of Inside Football, had a very special working relationship with Harry Carson, and I don't know quite the origins of it. I think it had something to do with the fact that Harry, I believe, was a fourth-round pick, and at the time, I think Dr. Livingston was the only one who went up to talk to him back in the day. But anyway, long story short, when Harry retired and had his press conference, he singled out Dr. Livingston and referred to him as my Helen Thomas, who, for those of you who don't know who Helen Thomas was, she was a longtime White House correspondent who used to get the first question in with all the presidents. I think President Obama might have stopped that practice, but Helen Thomas was widely respected at the time and, like I said, a longtime correspondent. So just to see, you know, that relationship was kind of special. And, you know, I don't know Harry as well as Dr. Livingston did, but he's certainly a guy who, I agree with you, someone who held himself high and who lived up to what you would expect of a Giants football player. Other linebackers, I agree with you on Antonio Pierce. He was a guy who was always very helpful. You know, I appreciated his leadership. I appreciated how, you know, he always took the role of underdog. I remember his famous list in which he used to cross off the names of those who were drafted ahead of him at his position and how he was determined to outlast them. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he did. I can't remember how many were on that list, but I think he outlasted all of them. And he was just a really knowledgeable guy. When you wanted to break down a play or run something by, you know, that you thought you saw and you wanted to run something by him, he could help you through that, you know, as well as anybody out there, and just, you know, really a good leader. In terms of my all-time favorite, that one's a tough one because there's just so many guys, and you know, the ones I've mentioned, I know Michael Boley was somebody I liked. I'm just trying to think who else. I mean, there's a bunch of guys now that are promising, you know, that I think are going to be good players. Oh, Alec Ogletree, B.J. Goodson.
I think, you know, Patty, did you mention, you know, a guy that you and I both, you know, had a good relationship with over the past few years, and we had him on our previous show a few times.
Jasper.
Another one is Jonathan Casillas.
Jonathan Casillas, yes, yes. Can't forget Jonathan. Jonathan was super. I'm kind of sorry that he's not around anymore because he was picking guys out. I told him he's got a future in scouting. I mean, he was picking the guys that you have to watch. So Jonathan was definitely one. I appreciated what John Beeson brought to the team, even though John Beeson was kind of beat up by the time he got to the Giants. Just, you know, so many guys. You know, you mentioned Carl Banks, and you know, he's been a friend to us as well. So it's just so hard to narrow down one. That's the one position that if you said to me, you know, narrow down one, I actually have like half a dozen there. So I'd have to give that one some more thought.
So we'll put all those names in a pot for you, Patty, and leave it.
Yeah, I'll have to pick. I'll have to pick one out of the pot, definitely. All right, let's make our way back to the defensive secondary, and let's start with cornerback.
Oh, that one's hard for me, Patty. That one is so hard for me. You know, it's funny because corner has just been one of those positions for the Giants over the years that you don't have a lot of, you know, quote-unquote star power, you know, at the corner position over the years. It's hard for me because not a lot of guys over the years, as I think about it, you know, not a lot of guys stick out. I mean, obviously of recent vintage, guys that were real personalities, you know, were Ontrell Roll and Dominique Rogers, Cromartie. You know, the guy maybe, you know, I think about a guy who did a lot in a short period of time and had his career shortened, you know, by an unfortunate injury was Jason Sehorn. You know, that's a tough position for me, Patty, because nobody really stands out as, you know, the guy that I think about when I think about corners. Or, you know, if I had to pick a favorite, I might give you Sehorn just because I really enjoyed watching him play.
Okay, this one is actually easy for me because while I agree with you, there wasn't really anybody who kind of jumped out at you in terms of, wow, he's like the all-time greatest corner they've ever had. There were a bunch of guys who contributed and who were solid in many ways. And I'm going to name two off the top of my head. Sam Madison and R.W. McQuarters were two guys who were very instrumental in that 2007 championship team. They were under the radar type guys, but I always look at Sam Madison and R.W. as the reasons why Corey Webster, who would probably be another favorite of mine, would actually come into his own. Because Corey Webster, if you remember, when he first came into the league, he struggled. He wasn't really in a system that complemented what he could do. And, you know, he struggled, and unfortunately he had his own little attitude issues and whatnot. And between the change in defensive coordinator from Tim Lewis, I think it was from Tim Lewis to Steve Spagnuolo, and the encouragement and the teachings of R.W. and Sam Madison, it just brought out the best in Corey Webster. And I think he actually became not a Pro Bowler. I think he was an alternate, a first alternate or something like that. But he really came into his own as a cornerback. And just that whole dynamic and just how, you know, again, Sam and R.W. weren't with the team very long, but when they were, they certainly made an impact that you could feel and see on the playing field. Okay, moving on now to safety, and I think there's a lot of choices here at safety. Wouldn't you agree?
I think there are a lot of choices, Patty, and as we've been talking, it's funny because I've been thinking about the safety position and you've been thinking about, you know, even the current team, because I think that, you know, when it's all said and done, I think, you know, the guy who is pretty much the man in the Giants defense right now is Landon Collins. And I think when it's all said and done, you know, if we did this 5 years from now, I might give you Landon Collins as my answer to this question. But you're right. There's a lot of guys over the years, you know, who you could put into this equation. I'm going to go back into a little bit into the Wayback Machine and back into the wilderness years, only because, you know, I haven't had, you know, until recent years, haven't had the luxury of building some of the personal relationships with some of these guys that you have, you know, until, as I said, until the last few years. And I just remember, you know, sitting there every Sunday in the, you know, when I was a kid, you know, and I'm dating myself, when I was a kid, you know, in the late 60s and through the 70s, and the Giants were awful. And there were only a handful of guys, you know, who made them worth watching every Sunday. And I'm going to give you one of those, you know, and partially because, you know, how can you not love a guy, you know, with the nickname Spider? So I'm going to give you Spider Lockhart.
Okay.
Into the Wayback Machine again.
Okay. I mean, he's someone who I never saw play. Of course, I've read about him. I might have seen some clips and whatnot, so I can't really speak as fluently about him. So I don't want to certainly, you know, downplay his contribution.
So you called me an old man. All right, you just called me.
Yeah,
an old man.
I know.
All
I did.
Right.
I did. All right. I'm going to go more recent. And I agree with you about Landon Collins. I think Landon Collins is going to, you know, 5 years from now, if we were to do this exercise, he would be someone. Antrel Roll is a guy I think you have to put in the conversation. He was certainly one of my favorites. You know, people, you know, I know he rubbed some people the wrong way with his outspokenness, but look, he never minced words, and I for one can appreciate it. But if I had to pick one guy from the position, I'm going to pick Deion Grant. How's that for out of the left field, huh?
Deion Grant. When I think about it, I'm probably not surprised that you would go there. Just because I know, you know, I know what kind of a guy Deion Grant was, you know, and so I'm not really surprised that you would go there, because we're not picking. You know, we're not picking a team of the best players at every position, so.
Well, actually, okay, what I like about Deion, and just to clarify my criteria, yes, you know, part of it has to do with, you know, you're right, we're not necessarily picking the best all time at the position. But what we are trying to, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to pick guys who had an impact, a positive impact, that maybe wasn't as noticed or as appreciated as it should have been. And when I think of guys that fit that criteria, I think of Deion Grant. Because this is a guy who, remember, when he came over from the Seattle Seahawks, I believe he had started over 100 consecutive games, and he was coming to a Giants defense where he wasn't going to be a starting safety, but because of the defense they played, and if you remember, that was that three safety set that everybody fell in love with, Deion Grant certainly got a lot of playing time. And not only was he, you know, did he contribute to the 2011 championship team, but he was also a mentor, a guy who would speak up and who kind of helped guide those guys to what it took to win. And just watching him on the practice field, coach his teammates up, watching him in games, the leadership role he took, you just knew that you could count on him in the secondary. And just all those characteristics and qualities just made me appreciate the type of player that he, you know, that he is. And you know, once in a while we still see him. He comes up and he checks in on the Giants, you know. You know, and he still looks like he's still, you know, strap it up. But really a good guy. And I think last I heard from him, he was actually doing some coaching of kids. I don't know if he was coaching along with Rich Seibert, or I forget who it was he was helping, but you know, a guy who you just knew would somehow get into coaching in some way, shape, or form, because that's how he was as a teammate, and I think he just helped to make the guys around him better.
Interesting. Okay, I can't argue with any of that, Patty. You know, just he was a great guy to have around.
Definitely. I mean, you don't always have to be an all-star. I mean, there are guys at these positions that you can name that, you know, are flat out the best at their position. But I'm trying to think outside the box with my selections. But all right, so we've done the defense. Let's go to special teams now. We can do punter, kicker, and then your choice. If you want to do long snapper, if you want to do return specialist. So punter, you know, the Giants have been fairly lucky with punters in that when they get them in, they're usually around for a long time. Ed, I'll let you go first.
Patty, I have a feeling that we're both going to pick the same guy here.
I don't think so. I know who you're going to pick, but go ahead.
I'm going to pick Steve Weatherford. And I'm going to do that, obviously, you know, obviously Weatherford was a, you know, a hero of that 2011 Super Bowl team. Obviously, he was a real popular guy. But for me, you know, I'm going to pick Weatherford simply because Weatherford is a guy who, over the years when he was with the Giants, he was really good to me, just in terms of you know, offering his time to me, offering me some help with, you know, with a couple of situations that he didn't have to offer, where he didn't have to offer help, he didn't have to go out of his way, you know, and I don't want to get, you know, get deeply into those, but he did a couple of things for me that I will always appreciate, and, you know, and that he didn't have to do. So in addition to the fact that, you know, for a period of time, you know, when the Giants were, you know, a championship caliber football team, you know, he was a key part of that. I'll just always remember, you know, some of those things that he did for me, and so I'm going to pick Weatherford.
You know, he's definitely a grade A1 individual. He has also been good to me. I remember when I went through my cancer fight, he wanted to give me a game ball for having beaten the cancer. And I, of course, couldn't take the game ball because, you know, you're not allowed to do that as a reporter. But he, you know, he really wanted to honor me and my fight. And I always appreciated that. I always appreciated how he looked after me. And he even was there to help me as I was recovering from the chemo treatment. You know, any fitness, nutrition advice I needed, I could always call him. And to this day, I think I can still call him, and he's always there. The guy, though, I'm going to pick is Jeff Fegels. And the reason why I'm going to pick Jeff Fegels is because in terms of the performance on the field, there was nobody better, in my opinion, when it came to directional kicking, coffin corner kicking, and just putting that ball. I mean, Jeff Fegels kind of reminded me of Babe Ruth, where he would kind of point to a spot where the ball was going to go, and that ball would go. I mean, he was just an amazing punter. He's so technically sound. And to watch him all those years, it was just amazing. And I can remember telling him, it's funny, that the off season before he decided to retire, I said to him, "You better never retire, man." And he goes, "Well, eventually I'm going to have to." I'm like, "Yeah, but you better never retire." And part of the reason why I said that was because at the time he was the only player left in the locker room who was older than I was. So part of that
man.
Was selfishness on my part. Yeah, I know, I'm bad. But, you know, he, unfortunately, I think he had a back issue that forced him into retirement. But I just thought he was by far one of the best punters I've seen since maybe Dave Jennings to wear a Giants uniform, as far as consistency, as far as, you know, leadership. You know, Fegels was a leader on that team. And, you know, when he spoke, everybody listened. And just, you know, a tremendous individual. And I can't wait to see. I know he's got some sons. I think one of his sons is currently a college punter. And I can't wait to see how he does in the NFL.
You know, Patty, I have to tell a quick Fegels story. And this comes from the first or second year that I was covering the Giants, and they were still training in Albany. And, you know, we used to be able to get, depending on what field they were on, and for folks who don't know, Albany had, I think, 5 different practice fields. And back in those days, we could basically get right on the sidelines to watch practice. And Fegels was punting one day, and you're talking about how good he was directionally makes me wonder, you know, what I happened to do wrong on that given day, because he kicked a ball that came right at me. And I remember just standing there with my notebook and my recorder and whatever, and I'm like, do I put this stuff down and try to catch this, or do I just let it drop? And I decided to take the gutless route, and I let it drop because there were fans behind me, and I really didn't want to muff it. So I just decided, you know, it's been a long time since I caught a punt. You know, I'm not going to risk looking foolish here, so I just let the ball fall. But he hit that ball right, and it landed right at my feet, and I was like, why? Why me?
Oh, that's funny. That is definitely funny. The stories, I'm telling you, the memories that this topic is bringing back are amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. Well, moving on, let's talk about kicker, our favorite kicker. This one we might agree on because, I don't know, but again, with kickers, they have basically been – they've had longevity. The Giants, you know, have been lucky in the most part where they don't have to go through kickers every year like some teams do. So I guess not a whole lot of choices here, but still, I'd like to hear who your pick is, and then I'll give you who my pick is, and I guarantee you we're gonna have different picks here.
Oh, Patty, you know, as we've gone through these picks, they've kind of taken some twists and turns, and so, you know, and I think we've both made some surprising picks, and I think, you know, this one is hard for me because in a lot of these positions there isn't, you know, one single guy who immediately jumps to mind. I think I'm going to give you Matt Barr. Just because of all of the key kicks that he made for the Giants over the years, and to be honest with you, because of the cool single bar on the face mask.
Throwback.
There you go.
Definitely.
I'm dating myself again.
Oh, my goodness. They're funny. All right. I'm going to give you a name also from the past, and that name is Brad Dalloiso. Right? A name maybe some people have forgotten. Dalloiso, as I recall, was a solid kicker, reliable kicker, and I think, you know, what ended up happening with him is he suffered an injury when he had, I don't remember the play, but I can remember the reporter who was sitting next to me groaning about the special teams coach, who I think was Larry McDuff at the time, saying, what the heck is he doing, having Brad Dalloiso track down a ball carrier, something like that. So I don't remember the details, so maybe some of you out there will remember it a little bit better. But what I liked about Dalloiso, besides the fact that, you know, he was consistent and he was reliable, he was always willing to share secrets of his craft, because I can remember many times, you know, being curious about kicking, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, you just put the ball on a tee, you line it up, and you hit it. And there really is an art to kicking. You know, you have to take into consideration when. You have to take into consideration what hash you're on. You know, there's so many things you have to factor. You know, what's the coach asking you to do? Is he asking you to go deep? Is he asking you to put it on the sideline? And Dalloiso, I remember doing an interview with him for back in the day, it was kind of almost like the summer school series, like you run now on Big Blue View, but we used to do them we used to call them, you know, a day in the life of, and then we would put the position in there, and the player would kind of tell us, you know, the tricks to their trade. So Dalloiso really gave me good information and a better understanding of what a kicker does. And, you know, it's stories like that that really help you, you know, as you move forward in your career, because you know what to look for now when you watch these players and you go to evaluate them. So you can kind of get into the little details that a lot of people can't get into. And Dalloiso, like I said, he was a good kicker. You know, did very well for the team. It was unfortunate that his career had to get cut short due to an injury, and just a really, you know, scientific guy when it came to his particular craft. And then, Ed, finally, let's just pick a random special teamer. It can be a long snapper. It can be a returner. I have a feeling I know where you're going to go, but let's see if I'm right.
Oh, you're predicting now, Patty? You're predicting where I'm going to go?
Let me see if I'm right.
Oh, you might be, because I'm going to go into the Wayback Machine. I'm going to go to the Parcells era, and I'm going to give you Phil McConkie.
Ooh, I would be wrong. I would have guessed you would have gotten more recent, but.
I have to give you McConkie, just again, sort of along the lines of you know, the Jim Burt, you know, selection and guys like that, just because I love the blue collar, you know, attitude, the work ethic, you know, the guy who wasn't the superstar, the guy who played, you know, who played with a lot of guts and you know, knew his role and did his job and was a key, you know, contributor, you know, a little bit maybe like Dave Tollefson, you know, during his time, you know, guy that maybe didn't have all the ability in the world, but who made himself, you know, a key part of some really, really good Giants football teams.
Wow, Phil McConkie. Wow, I remember
where did
him.
You think
was
I was?
A,
where did you think I was going to go with this?
I thought you might pick Dwayne Harris.
You know that's he. I loved Dwayne Harris simply for his toughness, you know, and all of the things that he could do. Unfortunately, you know, as it works out, you know, Dwayne, you know, was. You know, he's pretty beat up and especially last year didn't do very much and sort of played his time with the Giants through kind of a rough period of Giants football. I think two of those three seasons were losing seasons, but he would be a guy who would be up near the top of my list as well.
Okay. All right. I can see that. I'm going to go with a couple of guys and they just so happen to be father, son. And that would be the Diassi men. Steve Diassi from the Bill Parcells era, otherwise known as Beach Ball. I think that was his nickname from Coach Parcells. And his son, Zach Diassi. Now, I never met Steve Diassi. I know of him, obviously. But he's one of those guys where I don't think they could have, you know, had the success they had without him. He was on point, you know, he was a leader. He was one of Parcells' trusted locker room generals. Just one of those underrated types who, you know, you don't think of in terms of all pro or pro bowlers, but who just, you know, he helped make the special teams run. And, you know, at a time when special teams was often thought of as, you know, the bottom of the barrel in the NFL, it's just the attitude shift towards special teams and then realizing that, hey, it is one-third of the game and is instrumental in setting up, you know, field position. It's just made special teams, you know, the sexiness has been brought back in special teams is, I guess, the best way to say it. With Zach Diassi, again, you think of all the times he has bailed this team out. A Pro Bowl long snapper, a guy who, as recently as last year, when you watch, he was always amongst the first, if not the first, down the field. You know, a guy who has battled through some injuries. You know, I know he's had some back issues. He's had he had a surgery on his thumb, I believe, a couple of years ago that ended his season early. He is a locker room leader. He's one of the longest tenured Giants, I think, behind Eli Manning, a guy whom everybody respects. And just, you know, a guy who gets it because, you know, you look at long snappers and you say, gee, you know, they're kind of a waste because they only do one thing. But you look at the guys who do that one thing and do it well, and you say to yourself, boy, thank God we have him and not some guy who's going to, you know, shoot the ball backwards and it's going to go out, you know, fly out of control and play. Instead of getting a field goal, it's going to be a busted play. So I can appreciate certainly, you know, the job that both the Aussie men have done. And it's been a joy to kind of see Zach carry on the torch that his father started with the Giants.
Yeah, I would have to second all of that, you know, with the Diocese, Patty, because obviously, you know, I saw both of them play, and I've seen Zach Diocese the last few years, and I'm constantly amazed watching him play. You know, maybe when he was younger, it wasn't quite as, you know, surprising to me, but even now, he's always, you know, after snapping the ball, I'm still amazed that he's one of the first couple of guys down the field, you know, when he, you know, on punts. And you know, it's just amazing to me that he's able to do that, because he's really a true part of that coverage team. You know, and the thing about long snappers is you don't notice them. You don't want to notice them, you know, and Giants fans, you know all too well from Giants, you know, history not that many years ago, that you don't notice them until they mess up in a big spot, and you don't ever want to see that happen. And Diocese's been snapping for what, for the Giants, 11 or 12 years, and I can probably count bad snaps. You know, if there have been bad snaps, maybe only two or three of them in that entire time.
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, I think people are going to miss him when he's gone. And certainly, you know, there's been times when he has been gone and they've tried to replace him. And, you know, they've gotten the job done. But it's kind of interesting, because as part of my, you know, review of positions, I can remember one former long snapper before Diocese came on telling me, oh, all it is just throwing the ball between your legs. And it's really so much more than that, because, yeah, I mean, anybody can get down and throw the ball between their legs, but you have to get it at a certain height. I imagine you would have to adjust your snap to the height of your punter. You have to, you know, put a rotation on the ball for the placeholder, for the kicker. There's just so many little intricacies that have to be accounted for. And really, you know, we talk about the kicking operation being a battery. And if you think of that battery, I think the long snapper is really the guy that drives that, whether it's the punting unit, whether it's the kicking unit. And I just don't think that the long snapper position gets as much glory as it should. And I understand why, because it's not playing as much, but I think it should get a lot more credit than what it does. So,
well, when you think about long snapper, Patty, and I don't want to belabor, you know, the long snapper position, but you're absolutely right, because when you think about it, when you're snapping to a punter, for example, if your snap is a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, you know, you may, the punter might be able to catch it, but you've messed up the punter's footwork. You know, if the snap on a field goal isn't quite right, you've made it harder on the holder to get the ball down. So it's not just finding somebody, you know, who can get the ball there. Like you said, it's a whole operation. It's very technical, and we see more and more with field goals now that it looks so easy, and a lot of that has to do with how good a lot of these long snappers are.
Exactly. It's a position you can't take for granted. And you know, I don't want to bring up the incident from several years ago in the playoffs, but
we can hit at it, Patty, but we cannot ever speak directly.
Yeah, I know. I feel bad that he's going to be forever, you know, linked to that, but that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about how important the role of a long snapper is in special teams. So, but, you know, hopefully point made regarding, you know, the importance of it. So, Ed, we have now gone through offense, defense, special teams. Is there anybody else that we didn't cover, or anybody you thought of as we went through this exercise that you want to get in as a final, you know, push as a favorite for whatever reason?
Not really, Patty. I just want to say, you know, we were kind of scratching and trying to think of what to do for a couple of shows here this week, and you know, kudos to you actually for coming up with this idea, because this this turned out quite well. I thought it's a little something different, little trip down memory lane, you know, with a lot of these guys. I thought this was a fun thing to do for a couple shows.
Yeah, I agree. It was fun going down memory lane, and I hope all of you who tuned in enjoyed it. And as always, if you guys want to weigh in with who your favorites are or what memories that you have, you can hit us up on LockedOnGiants@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter @Patricia_Trainer or @BigBlueView. And we'd certainly be interested to see who you remember as being a favorite for whatever reason, whether it was the guy who signed an autograph for you or just because you liked how he played or whatever the case may be. You know, we'd be certainly interested in seeing that. Just a quick programming note, next week the Giants are back with OTAs. We have the final media availability for OTA. I think it's going to be Monday, if I'm not mistaken. It might be Monday or Tuesday. And then we're going to have a few more days before we have the mandatory mini camp coming up, which is the following week. So make sure you keep it here on Locked On Giants. Ed and I will bring you all the news, all the breakdowns, all the analysis. And we thank you again for listening to us. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon.